Voices Radio Network.
The views and opinions of Muscle Minds is for entertainment and educational purposes only.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Better than he was before. Better, stronger, faster.
Welcome to Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson and Scott McNally, part of the Advices Radio Network, a new voice in bodybuilding podcasting.
Welcome back to Muscle Minds. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, Dr. Scott Stevenson. What is up, man? How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. We got a special guest this time, which is pretty cool.
I'm pumped.
Had to go outside of our normal regular recording time to make this happen.
Yes. So it's Friday night.
It's Friday night, baby. We're living large.
What are we doing?
Living it up.
We are podcasting with Lats, Casey Reed. Brother, thanks for being with us, man.
Great to be here, man. Always like doing it.
So it really says a lot about what, you know, the lives that we have going on for ourselves. If we are sitting around the microphone on a Friday night podcasting, I mean, you think that, you know, a guy who's running one of the most popular message boards would be, well, no, not really. I know what we all do with bodybuilding. We eat food, we, you know, train, and we go to sleep, and that's about it.
Pretty much.
Yeah, you know, I always tell my wife, if you're looking for a complex man to brag about, you screwed up. I literally come home from work, I eat her cooking, I go in my garage, I lift, I lay on the couch, and I'm back to bed.
Nice. I can relate. So
we're not going to find you listed under the definition for Renaissance man, that you're saying?
Exactly, yeah.
Gotcha.
She's not getting Bradley Pitt with me. I got news for you.
Hey, I wanted to give a shout out to all of the listeners over there from Professional Muscle. You know, thanks, Casey, for letting us post a thread over there. So we took a few questions, and like Scott said, we're going to jump outside of the norm tonight. What we're going to do is we're going to take questions from the thread that we had posted. So thank you guys for participating, and thanks for all the Professional Muscle guys for listening. It's been a board, man, that I had learned a lot from. You know, it's something that's been there, and hopefully it's helped educate a lot of people. I think we talked about that before, Scott. You've been on there basically since the start, haven't you?
I think Casey got a hold of me within the first year or two when the board started and
right.
Said, hey, come on over, man. Get on here.
Yeah. And I tell you what, it's been around for, I mean, I've been a mod on it for, I'm going to say 20 years. And you figure, you know, Big A, who started the board, I have to give him, you know, all the credit. He started that board. And the first thing he always said was, you know, we're not going to sugarcoat anything. You know, people are going to be able to talk about what they want to talk about. And he came on numerous times and, you know, and told people about, hey, this is what I took and this is what I knew so-and-so took. I mean, so he was always been very open about it. And I think a lot of that leads to, you know, actually being safer, to be honest with you, you know, because or, you know, you start explaining, you know, what these guys are taking and the issues that sometimes they can occur. So, you know, I mean, it's been a good board. I mean, you know, it's been around a long time. And I think Big A deserves, you know, a lot of credit for at least being honest about what's out there.
That's pretty mm-hmm. cool. And you were saying too, I mean, as far as education goes, I mean, there's even, I think, a level of safety involved. From what I understand, you guys have information about testing of particular products and stuff that are available out there. So in a way, that kind of helps protect the end user, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, and what I always like to say is, you know, like I said, Pro Muscle and, you know, the sister board that goes with it, which is anasci.org is on, you know, that does a lot of the testing. And we just, you know, of course, the two boards are related. And it does because what we started to do is, you know, in K1, which is one of the other mods there, he's one that kind of got this thing rolling. But what it is you take a source and you, unbeknownst to him, you test him. And, you know, and the thing about this type of thing is, you know, and we do a lot of testing. I mean, it's monthly. It goes on, and it allows the end user to at least have some education as to what, how this guy is testing out. And if you choose to keep using a guy that's failed, well, that's up to you. But at least it allows you also to know who's passing. And it also keeps the sources honest, because if you're on that board, you're going to get tested. So it's, you know, and it's going to get tested repeatedly. So, you know, I mean, if, and also, you know, like you, and you know, as well as I do, it's no different than buying a car or anything else. You get one bad experience, you know, you can, that can fold a whole place up.
Yeah. No kidding. What's the name of that other board again? The sister board?
ANASCI.org. You can join there. Like I said, it's kind of a sister board of Pro Muscle. You join that board, what you end up doing is, you know, you have to, you know, post and, you know, be able to qualify to see some of the testing, or be a member. But it's on there. It's about, and you'll see, like I said, you'll see it listed on ours. Anytime there's a test, Pro Muscle will run, you know, here it is. But we don't say what passed, but then you have to go over to the sister board to look at the testing.
Interesting. That's really cool. So just out of curiosity, how common is it to see a lab just drop on its face and fail?
We've seen it.
It's happened.
It's happened. Yeah, and it's, I tell you what, and what's, and like we were talking before, it, what kind of scares me the most is when you see a lab that fails consistently, and people still, and they still have groupies. It makes no sense to us. But, you know, I think what a lot of that comes down to is, and I don't like to use the word with age, but with experience, is, you know, going in that, you know, you want to get the most bang for your buck. So you look at these tests and you see that maybe, you know, lab A is constantly passing and they're passing with flying colors. And the only thing we can do is show you those tests. And if you choose to use lab B, who's substituting DECA for EQ and Prima Bolin for, you know, NPP, then that's, you know, that's on you. But, you know, that's, it doesn't look good to me. I think it's kind of silly, but, you know, what we try to do on that is just to be able to keep everybody honest, you know, and that's what's going to happen.
So
it only takes one bad test, you know?
Yeah. In these situations, I mean, of course, you can't know because you aren't in the heads of the people who are manufacturing this stuff. But do you think that these are sometimes when somebody fails, is it a mistake? Are mistakes happening? Or do you think there are people that are genuinely just trying to pull one over? Or do you think it's a combination of the two?
I'll give you an example. There was a source on the board who tested great on everything. Then we got to one compound where he tested. It was supposed to be Prima Bolin. He tested, it was pure NPP. So, and it wasn't like he was trying to dilute it. I mean, it was a test, and he tested pretty much on the mark for NPP, but it was supposed to be Prima Bolin. Now, in this source's case, and of course, you know, I talked to him repeatedly about it. And in this source's case, it was bad powder labeling. I do believe he got nailed in the raw department, meaning the raw powders. I believe that's what was sent over. I don't think he had anything to gain from doing that.
Yeah.
Because everything else tested fine until that happened. And then, you know, then you have the other labs who we have tested who have just repeatedly just switched compounds. And, you know, you can't, if it's like, to give you an example, like I said, if it's supposed to be 100 milligrams a trin, and it's 50 milligrams of test and 50 milligrams of NPP.
God.
Well, that shows me a intent. Yeah. You know, it's not like you could have mixed up these powders, because we would have a lot more skew in the numbers. So there's, to me, this shows intent. And the thing about it is this didn't happen once, twice, or whatever. This happens a few times with the same. So I do believe that there are some just legitimate mistakes that are made. I do believe that, you know, but I also, on the other end, you know, when you see a consistent pattern, then you know this guy's just a snake.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you know, besides this stuff, I'm Professional Muscle. There's a lot more information, a lot of training stuff, diet stuff. That's where you get more involved, right, Scott?
Yeah. I mean, my take is that, first of all, I'm not terribly big on the government having nearly the say so they do about what people put in their bodies, just in general. So I'm for this kind of thing. I mean, in a way, it's a service because, I mean, how often has prohibition worked as far as drugs go, like in the history, at least the history that I'm aware of, it doesn't really end up panning out all that well.
Yeah.
So no. People are going to use things, you know, anything that, at least my perspective is anything that's helping folks use things more safely and knowingly and in an educated fashion is good. You know, I mean, that's just almost like too obvious, but not obvious to everyone. So yeah, that's kind of just really pretty cool that the board can stay there and function in the way that it does. You know, kind of as much on the up and up as you can be to a certain degree, you know, and just with all these checks and balances, it's pretty unique.
I think. And, you know, I will say that, you know, like I said, the way the testing is done, you know, it's the testing, of course, you know, is not done here, quote unquote. So it's, you know, it's done. It's taken pretty good care of. I mean, it's fairly well insulated. The only thing that is the quote unquote legal maneuver is the person obtaining the drug and then sending it in for testing, but the testing itself is, you know, on the up and up. But sure. I will say that, you know, like getting back to what Scott said about, you know, government stepping in and all that, the thing that you have to look at is if there weren't tests like this going on, I mean, we've already seen what some of these guys are substituting it for. So there are some legit labs out there, don't get me wrong, who would never do that. These guys have integrity, they wouldn't do it. But, you know, money talks, and, you know, and if they don't have DECA on hand and it just happens to be EQ sitting there, well, you might be getting EQ instead of DECA. So, you know, that these things do happen. And, you know, the more we bust it, the more that it's found, like I said, the better it is. And I have to give, like I said, the credit, you know, a lot of when this started was because we just had too many people complaining about, you know, this isn't working, or this is bull, and my blood tests were awful. So, you know, everybody kind of got together, and K1 kind of headed it and took it to his board, and things took off. And it's been very, like I said, it's been very enlightening, you know, and you do find out the sources that are good, and those are the ones you stick with. You know, because I'm not talking, like I said, about repeating, you know, passing one test. It's repeated tests, repeated tests, repeated tests. So those are the guys you should stick with. But, you know, that, of course, we leave that up to the consumer as to where they want to go.
So I've got a kind of a question. I'm imagining the situation sort of from the perspective of someone who is supplying these things. And, like, they get an order in for Primo and they don't have any, so they concoct something so they can fill that order. Do you get the sense that the market is such that, if they say, you know, not available when it comes to Primo, they'll just lose an entire, it's like so kind of cutthroat, and there's so much availability. And maybe their profit margin is such that they can't stand to lose a customer under any circumstances, that's what's driving that? Or is it more of the fact, like, you know, we obviously have our cultural sort of perspective on, you know, drug dealers being shady people, which I don't think is obviously a perfectly valid stereotype 100% of the time.
Right.
Or is it a
right.
matter of, like, some people are just, they're just in it. I guess the question could be answered partly, like, how many of suppliers do you see come and then vanish in a matter of a couple years? They sort of establish pseudo credibility and then they just do the reverse scam type of thing. Sell people bunches. How common is that? And what do you think the reasons are for that?
Well, it's very common. Going to your first point of why this would happen is you have a guy who's taking in money hand over fist. You know, a lot of people are using him. And he's all of a sudden he's run out of a compound, or he can't obtain the compound. You know, like maybe his raw source just doesn't have it, or he had a seizure. You know, and he's promised, hey, I've got all this Primobolan coming. Well, the Primobolan gets seized. Well, sitting there, he can either give back, you know, with Primobolan, let's just say the average price is, you know, $85 to $100 for 100 milligram per cc. Let's, you know, and now you've got that. So Imprimable and powder is very pricey. So you've got him sitting here with somebody who just sent him for five bottles of Prima Bullen. He's got $500 in his hand. He's not going to give it back. So what ends up happening is, you know, what is the closest feel, quote unquote, to Prima Bullen I can give? Well, what about I do, you know, 100 milligram of NPP? You know, in it's not, it really comes down to, you know, let's say that, like I said, the powder got seized. He's not giving the money back. I got all this Prima Bullen sitting here. I charge for Prima Bullen only $50 a bottle, and voila, you know, he's doubled his profits. So it's like, I don't necessarily think that a lot of times it's meant as a scam, but
it's not premeditated.
No, it's not premeditated, but I think a lot of times I have all this money, I'm not giving it back, and half of these quote unquote people won't know the difference, and I'll just start substituting. And I think that's what ends up happening. And when you start to notice a source going bad over the years is when they're having trouble getting powder coming across. So powder starts to kind of, you know, the feds are on to them per se, or customs are on to them. So things are getting nailed more repeatedly. So they have less and less powder to draw from.
Right.
So that's when you start having, I've only got so many grams of test. I've only got so many grams of DECA. You know, and this guy wants EQ, and I don't have any, you know, and, you know, it for some reason, you know, what it is, it's robbing Peter to pay Paul. You're putting a Band-Aid on it, hoping that you're going to get more powders in it that nobody will ever know. And no, it's never going to get tested, you know, and this guy will, you know, what's the difference between EQ and DECA? You know what I mean? There's this mentality of, I can just get by this a couple times until I get more powder in, and then eventually the powder just dries up.
I'm contrasting that in my mind, like with an over-the-counter bodybuilding or sports supplement company. And let's say, you know, you order an intra-workout that's got carbs and protein, and they, for whatever reason, they don't have the protein source. So, you know, the comparable situation would be like, screw it. Just send them a bunch of, throw some extra maltodextrin in there, and, you know, they'll never know the difference, which, of course, it would never happen. And I think that's but alternatively, well, a couple of thoughts. One, with the way you guys seem to be doing things over there, you're creating some checkpoints where that shit gets figured out really quickly. So the tendency for a supplier to think, hey, I can just, you know, pull the wool over this someone's eyes and don't have to worry about it, is probably going to go down, hopefully, because they'll get sampled, they'll get tested, and they'll fail, and people will know. Or there's lots more smart consumers who will know. It's like, you know, there's just something about this protein powder, this carb protein powder, doesn't just taste the same. Something about this stuff that doesn't feel the same. My blood work doesn't come back the same, where it's not giving the same side effects or the same positive, you know, desired benefits.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. It really comes down to, I do believe these guys start out, most of them anyway, with the best intention. And I want to make the best quality gear around, because I'm a meat, you know, I'm into this, you know, this lifestyle, and I want to be great. And then again, like I was saying, the powder maybe doesn't come in like it should. And then you just start, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul, hoping it just gets better. And eventually, you know, like I was saying, everything dries up, and then this guy just vanishes. But, you know, there's a couple of, like I was saying before, there's a couple of domestics that have just been on the money with every test. And it still baffles me when I see another one that just fail, and the people still right behind them going, oh, no, they're awesome. Mm. I'm like, look at all these options you have now, and you're still backing this guy? You know, it just baffles me to no end.
I would be a horrible drug dealer, because if I didn't have whatever they wanted, I would just tell them, like, hey, I haven't got that. Can I give you more of something else? Or, you know, I would just be honest. But
I tell you what, there's a couple of guys like that, and they're very honest. They'll get to the guy and they'll go, hey, I don't have product A. You know, I can give you a substitute, or I can give you a credit. You know, what else?
Yeah.
And that's what I would rather have product A be 6 months late than get product C, which I don't agree with. You know,
right. Yeah. You know, next thing you know, you're taking three times like the nandrolone you wanted, and like your wife wants to just divorce you because, you know, you have no interest in her. Yeah,
exactly. The whole thing, like I was telling you before, some of these guys who are, you know, really, really are gung ho about, they want their products to be great. So they completely overdose. Mm. And what kills you is now what you're finding out after the test had started that, you know, they'll go, hey, Billy Bob's is the most powerful test I've ever had. And then he'll go, and I also tried, you know, Janet's, and it sucked. Well, then you do the test. No, Janet's is on the money. Janet's is 250 milligrams per cc like it's supposed to be. Billy Bob, who's supposed to be 250 cc's, is at 400 milligrams. So you're claiming that, you know, Billy Bob's is the best test ever. No, Billy Bob's is extremely overdosed, and you don't know what you're taking. So it's, you know, we run into that too, where we've seen, you know, like this, you know, guys have great, great, great tests, and it's just completely, I mean, you're not talking 10% over, you're talking sometimes 50% over or more. And then they're talking about how his test is legit and Janet sucks. No, Janet is actually testing right on the money. So, you know, you run into that too.
Yeah. Hey, Casey, are you familiar? I was trying to look for it here. I think it's maybe on my other computer. I think Bill Llewellyn still does some testing in his book, yeah. Anabolics.
Yeah, he does. He does some testing, yeah.
Maybe you don't recall off memory. I'd just be interested to see. Of course, he's sampling these products, I think, in a different way than, you know, he's just getting them sent to him as opposed to the way you guys are doing it. But I wonder if he sees the same pattern of distribution in terms of underdosing and overdosing and then just a misdosing, so to speak, of the wrong substance, you know,
if he's dealing with UGs, I'm sure he is. I'm sure he's seen it, you know, a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on who the UG is, because, you know, there's other places that are also testing, you know, Anabolic Labs test too. And they've got some, you know, and things have, you know, tested on the money. They've had some that have been really skewed. It just really depends on the lab. And, you know, like I said, now you see these labs, like we were talking about earlier, that are overseas, and they're actually being made in GMP facilities. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're basically, the headquarters, let's say, is in Russia. They're being made in a GMP or, you know, an equivalent facility, let's say in India or even in China. And these things are coming out of there and they're testing spot on. So, mm-hmm. you know, they're just, you know, they're coming out of, in that country's terms anyway, they're coming out of a farm grade facility or a pharmaceutical facility. But, you know, there are labs that are like that now too. And, you know, and they have, you know, of course it's a business. They have no reason to be substituting and they don't have to deal with powder shortages. You don't have to deal with customs. So they have a little bit of an advantage. But like I said, there's about, there's quite a few, but there's been about two or three domestic UGs that have been right on the freaking money. And, you know, I tell people all the time, I'm like, hey, you know, whether you use or not, quote unquote, that, you know, these guys are at least doing the job. But then, you know, what we're starting to see more is just more of these facilities popping up overseas that are, you know, kind of making up some of the ground.
So those overseas production manufacturing plants that are adhering to GMP, are they in countries, the kind of countries, like if you went there and like you went into a pharmacy, regardless of whether you had a prescription or not, like you'd find a 10 cc bottle of test, 200 milligrams per mil for like $8 or something like that, where it's so cheap. Yeah. But so for them, I'm sure there's probably some illegalities that are involved with getting it out of their country in the way they do. But for them, there is more profit in selling it at underground prices than there is on the regular prescription formal market, sounds like.
Well, yeah. And let's say, yeah. they have some more expenses, I'm sure, because they have to pay employees and they have a lab time rate and all that. But what people sometimes don't understand is that, you know, they're producing these things in a country where, you know, it's up to that country's standards. And they're being produced and they're being, now when you order it, that's where the illegality comes in.
Right.
Because now it's going through the postal service, you know, and, the postal service, of course, is, you know, you can't send that stuff through the postal service. But as far as what this company's doing, according to their country, they're fine. But where some of them have gotten into trouble is when you start seeing them send it out directly from that company. So what they usually have is like a buffer they have a company, quote unquote, set up that it gets sent to, and then it gets sent, you know. So, I mean, they're protected. They're sometimes far away, many countries far away, while these things are sent out. But, you know, there's a lot of them that are that way. I mean, you have, and again, I'm not backing any particular labs, but, you know, one of the bigger ones is Pharmacom in Dragon. Dragon Pharma. You have quite a few, you know, they're out there that are produced in quality facilities. You know, SIS, all those things are out there. So, in the, you know, in every test that they've showed, they do well. So, you know, and that's, you know, and various boards that have done that. So, again, it's a very competitive market, but you are starting to see more and more of these labs overseas that are popping up. And you know, what's funny is there's no embarrassment about backing these labs. And here's what I mean. Like Pharmacom, to give you an example. If you go onto Russian bodybuilding websites, all these guys are wearing Pharmacom t-shirts. You know, they're not the least bit embarrassed about it. They're wearing Pharmacom hats. They're wearing Pharmacom sweats. You know, they're in Pharmacom videos, you know, where they'll show the video where it's actually showing the stuff being produced in these beautiful labs. And these guys are, you know, all giving a thumbs up. So, you know, so it is that way. You know, some of these countries, it's just no different than, you know, it's not thought of that way. It's not thought of illegal. Or criminal, I should say.
Yeah, that's mind-blowing. That really is. This is fascinating stuff.
Yeah, and it's you'd be surprised. It's a lot of these labs, you know, and now you can see videos of Dragon Pharma producing their stuff. You can see videos of Pharmacon. You can see videos of, you know, various ones, and they show like the whole lab process, and you know, there's guys wearing their t-shirts, and you know, hey, there you go.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, you know, they're sponsoring bodybuilding shows.
You know? No one seems to care, sounds like.
No, it's just it's one of these deals where, you know, and we've all talked about this in numerous times, I'm sure, but it is what it is. You know, it's not secret to us. It's not, you know, I mean, it's what competitive bodybuilding has always been. It's always, you know, you do use things to help you. And, you know, like you said, it's nobody's business. You know, we look at it as we can't figure out what the whole the hubbub is. But, that's big brother has other ideas, I guess.
Hey, Casey, I hate to change the subject because I'm just sitting here just soaking all this in. And as somebody who's followed the boards and been on source boards for a long time, and I haven't really heard this kind of inside track, but I do. There's something I've been wanting to ask you about. So last time we had you on, we did not even scratch the surface of story time with Lats.
Oh, and yeah.
I gotta ask y'all about that because, you know, one of my passions is I don't even know if I'd call this reporting, but it's documenting, it's talking to other people, it's sharing ideas. And one of the things that blows me away about what I can do with podcasting is that I can take, you know, one person's ideas from one place in the world and share those ideas with everybody everywhere else. And I feel like that story time with Lats did that on a really cool level. Can you tell us a little bit about what story time with Lats is and how you started it? Because I know that some of the listeners out there probably don't even know what I'm talking about.
Well, you know, when we first started the board, what I was doing was we were kind of like, you know, you just exchange stories. And some of the stories would involve like, you know, Bertel Fox when I was growing up or, you know, some of these stars. So you'd have, you know, these interactions and I would just post them. You know, it wasn't even called Story Time with Lats. I'd just post them.
Okay.
So one of the guys finally said, you know, you need to do this like on a monthly basis and just post something like this. So I jokingly just called it kind of Story Time with Lats. And so, you know, I would just take old stories and then all about guys I've talked to. And then what I started to do was, you know, kind of like, you know, I'm not only on Professional Musk, but I'll go on to like a lot of the Euro boards too.
Okay.
So I'll go on the Euro boards and even some of the Middle Eastern boards. And, you know, on occasion, you know, you can get somebody on there who's actually, you know, a champion in that area or has done really well with, you know, like at the IFBB World Championships, the Amateur World Championships.
Yeah.
Things like that. So, you know, I would contact them. And on occasion, what would end up happening is you would get them to contact you back And then I would say, hey, I'm on this board and I write stories on this board.
Yeah.
So they would go and they'd kind of look at Professional Muscle, and then they would go, oh, okay. You know, and I'd say, look, I'm not going to tell them your name. Just, you know, I want you to just be blatantly honest with me. And maybe, you know, we can just, you know, share some information. And that kind of started. And believe it or not, you know, a lot of them were just like, oh, yeah, I got no problem with that. So they would start. And I would always try to explain to them, hey, look, you know, I just want 100% truth. I'm never going to tell anybody this. And I never have. Anybody that's ever told me any that has never got onto the board, it would be no different. Like I said, if you were to tell me something or Scott, you know, no, I would disguise it. I would never let it, you know, that out of the bag. And then we would just share that kind of information of what this person uses. And then it kind of gravitated every once in a while to just, you know, straight comedy, you know, something that would happen. I did a few story times that would just, you know, events that had nothing to do with bodybuilding. But most of it was bodybuilding related. And you know, a lot of them I never posted because they were so long. Huh. I did one with a Euro Masters competitor who's very well known over there anyway. And, you know, it was, I talked to him for 2 hours, 2.5 hours. And then, you know, by the time you get home from work and you're just like, man, I got to sit down and write this. And, it, you know, it can kind of sometimes be a little long, but I've probably got 12 or 15 that I've never even posted.
No kidding.
And I do know, I told my wife one the other day, I said, well, you know, since you're faster than me, I'm just going to dictate this stuff to you and you're going to start typing it. So hopefully, you know, within the next, you know, couple weeks, we'll start getting about one every couple weeks out and doing the story time with Lats.
Oh man, that would be awesome. I mean, I feel like, so a lot of this was started before my time, but it's something that I had heard about and it's something I've always been fascinated about. And me being a podcaster, I feel like you're giving me a lot of ideas. Let me put it that way. I feel like, that's just really cool, man. And I think that's,
yeah.
Who was one of the more exciting people? What's one of the most standout stories that you told? And I know you can't tell me who this person is, but can you explain it to me?
Well, I can actually tell you. I'll tell you one, and again, it has to do with, of course, you probably remember this guy, Bertel Fox.
Okay, yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm. You know, Bertel, of course, went to jail for murder, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But Bertel, when I was, you know, and of course, some of these, you know, don't involve, you know, like a lot of, you know, most do. Because that's what, you know, professional muscle people want to know, that ins and outs. And give me an example. Like I just did one with a Russian bodybuilder who has a really unique way of doing compounds. But I can explain that in a minute. But Bertel, I was down in – Bertel did a guest posing when I was 17. And Bertel was in St. Louis, and I was down there. And, this is the biggest guy I've ever seen in my life at that point. Utterly massive. So, you know, I was just like enthralled with him. I got a photo with him and, you know, he signed it and I was like, oh, okay, you know, Bertel's my new hero. Well, the next day we all go to the local gym, which was at that time, Turner's gym. And it was kind of a Venice Beach of the Midwest type deal. He made his own equipment. It was very hardcore. He was very, good dude, but he was very, eccentric, put it that way. But anyway, I was in the gym at the time, and we were like, you know, we're about ready to leave to go back home. But I'm sitting there with a buddy of mine, we're training, and here comes Bertel Fox. And I'm like, oh shit, you know, we can't leave now. You know, it's Bertel Fox, man. So Bertel comes in, and he's got on a sweatshirt, and he's, again, massive. He's just a big guy. And for that time, he was just like the Marcus Rule, you know what I mean?
Yeah, just a freak.
He's just a freak, yeah.
He's a freak, period. I don't care what time of what era you're talking about. He's freak.
Oh yeah,
he was a crazy freak. Big. Yeah,
he had unreal, awful form, most god awful form ever seen in your life.
Yeah,
as far as exercise,
it's true.
It's painful to watch him lift. And he got over, and he had it for a second. You know, of course, I'm 17 years old. I'm essentially stalking him in the weight room. And, you know, I'm trying to kind of work out next to him. Well, he had a buddy with temporary. And so the buddy, he gets on the bench press. And Bertel starts pounding out these, you know, fast, rapid benches. And he's 135, 225, 315, 405. And he's just cranking them out. And all of a sudden, he starts to add from 405 just, you know, numerous plates. And I'm like, oh, I got to stick around and watch this, right?
Okay.
So I kind of have my gym bag, but I don't want to look like a, you know, a fucking stalker. You know, I'm trying to be cool, like I don't care. I'm over towards the corner. I'm kind of like, you know, like every time he'd look at me, I'd just kind of look up at the ceiling fan, like, ugh, you know. And he's sitting there on the end of the bench, and now he doesn't have a spotter. Okay. The guy's gone. I don't know where the guy's at. And I'm looking around, and I happen to kind of like slow motion scan the room. And when I go to Bertle, we lock eyes.
Okay.
And I'm like, look away. And I can't. I'm looking right at Bertle. So within 3 seconds of our eyes locking, he looks at me and he goes, spot. And he points to the bar.
Okay.
And he kind of points to me. And I'm like, oh, there's no fucking way. No. I mean, it's in the mid-400s at this point. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do to help him. So, of course, I can't be a sis. You know, I got to go, sure. So I kind of drop my gym bag and I walk over there. And I said, hey, you know, I took a photo with you last night. And he was just really down to the, you know, he wanted to get his work out. He looked at me and he goes, yeah, I took a lot of photos. And he goes, spot. I'm like, oh, okay. So apparently we're not going to have a moment. So I walk to the back of the bench. And I get over it, and I look at him, and I said, well, how many you doing? You know, I'm like, you know, what are you going to do, Mr. Fox? He's just sitting there, and his eyes are closed, and he's kind of rolling the bar around. And he goes, well, if I get as many as I can. Of course, he had a very thick kind of a Barbados-type accent. He's English, but he had kind of had a really just thick accent. He goes, I'm going to get as many as I can. He goes, and then I'm going to need a tip on a couple.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, you know, he knows what he's doing. So I lift this off, and I can tell when it's in my hands, I'm going to be of absolutely no help to Bertle. You know, it's just heavy. And I get it over the top of him, and he starts, and he slams this thing off his chest, and he gets quite a few. I mean, although the form is atrocious, he gets quite a few, and then one of them hits, and it kind of goes about 8 inches above his chest. And he looks at me, and he goes, spot, just yells it. And I'm like, okay. So I give him some forced rep. And I pull it up, and the minute it gets to about 3/4 lockout, it drops out of my hands, and he goes right back down with it.
Oh.
He bounces it off his chest, and he's just straining. And I'm like, shit, he's going for another one. So I grab it again. Now, these benches weren't like the benches we have today where you can like kind of get up close to the guy. This was like a homemade, you know, thick bench, but, you know, technically without putting my testicles in Bertle's face, I can't spot him, okay? So the bar bounces into my hands, and I pull up a second one. And I'm thinking, this has got to be done. So I kind of like start to pull it back to the rack, and he drops it again.
Oh, God.
Now, at this point, I'm like, are you fucking – I'm going to kill Bertle Fox. he's going to freaking die. And it hits off his chest, and it's not going anywhere. And I'm to the point where, like, I've stepped over the main rung of the bench.
Yeah.
So I got my foot in front of me, and I'm pulling up for everything I'm worth. And I'm just thinking, for the love of God, it's the last fucking rep. And I'm pulling it, and it was the longest rep. I can tell you that literally American Pie, the song, probably could have played in that freaking rep. Okay. It's just the longest freaking rep. I couldn't do anymore. And he's screaming. I'm screaming. So we're pulling it up and find the bar.
You did have a moment.
Yeah, I did. We did have a moment. Yeah. The bar back into the fucking rails. And he sits up real quick, like it was no big deal. And he kind of moves his arms back and forth, you know, kind of feeling his chest. And he looks over at me and he nods and he goes, good spot.
Oh, God.
Okay. Yeah. You know, whatever. So I kind of start to walk away. And I'm thinking, and I can honestly tell you, my forearms, my brachial, my brachioradius, I've never had that kind of feeling to where like something tore. And it just felt like, you know, like you're 17. I'm trying to pull this off Bertle. And it finally, you know, I got back to my buddy and he goes, oh, man. He goes, well, I go, dude, I said, we got to get the fuck out of here. And I was really serious because I thought he's going to do this again.
Yeah.
Right. So he, right away, he's kind of walking around and he's stretching and he looks over at me again and he does a circular motion with his index finger. Like, you know, we're going to do this again. I look at my buddy Jim and I go, we got to go. And Jim goes, what do you mean we can go? And I go, dude, you don't understand. I can't do that again. I can't do it. I mean, I knew my limitations, and I can't do it again. And he goes, oh, no, man. He goes, Bertle Fox, man. He goes, he'd like to. I go, he don't even know my fucking name. I go, I was like, you know. So the minute he turned around, he turned around and jumped up and grabbed a tin bar. He was kind of just hanging from it. And the minute he did that, I set a land speed record out that freaking door into that freaking truck. And I'm like, go, go. And I remember just like driving away and remember looking back going, you know, I know that Bertle's probably going to hate me because now he has nobody to fucking spot him. I'm slinging. But I was, boy, I was like, I don't want to be responsible for the death, you know, of the Night of Champions winner. I just didn't want to do it. You know, yeah, he was miserable. Yeah.
You but almost yeah, already killed him once, right? You almost already killed him once, right?
Oh, yeah, I didn't want to do it again. I mean, here's the thing about this, I knew I was so tired, literally, by that third forced, that I was like, if he does three again, there's just no freaking way. And I didn't want to look like a puss in front of Burl, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't want to walk over and go, hey, can we reduce your poundage a little bit? Because I'm having trouble over here. You know, this last thing I want to freaking say to Burl Fox. But, yeah, I mean, that was one of them. I was about 17 years old. And, you know, it was funny is that George Turner's gym had a lot of champions in it. I mean, you know, Jeff, some of these guys, you know, people may not remember, like Jeff King, you know, Tony Harrison, Samir Bonat. I mean, a lot of those guys filed through that gym. And you could go down. We would go down there. We were like 17, 16. So we would go down there on the weekend and just kind of hang out because you just kind of, you know, we'd take a four-hour bicep workout just so you could freaking see who, you know, came in the door. You know, it was a neat little gym.
Have you ever seen Bertle Fox train? Have you ever seen any videos?
I haven't. No, I haven't.
You have to watch these, and anyone who hasn't seen them has to watch these to really get the full magnitude of Casey's story, because he was. I mean, like people give Branch Warren shit sometimes for just kind of throwing things around.
Yeah,
Bertle Fox made Branch Warren look like Ben Pekulski.
Oh my god! mean, like,
and I say that laughingly just because I just heard an interview where Ben, or the person that he was talking to, interviewing, compared Ben and Branch in the same sentence. And Ben's like, how could you possibly do that? But he literally was really, really powerful.
Yeah.
But just like stretch reflex galore and partial reps. I mean, it was literally, you couldn't have intentionally made it more of sort of a ballistic, obviously somehow controlled, but like every rep was the verge of a tear. He probably, if he weren't just made of a, you know, the crazy stock that he was, just like the guy obviously had, you know, incredible genetics, just a natural workhorse. He would have, anyone else trying to train that way would have lasted about 6 months and right. Everything would have been torn.
And I'm telling you, and when he would bring a bar down for the bench press, he would hit it so hard into his chest that it would like go in, you know, like a couple inches because he had such thick pecs, and right. it would spring off of his chest, and then essentially he was just kind of catching it at lockout.
Oh my god!
And then he would drop it again. And the funny thing about him was, any exercise he did didn't look like anything you've ever read. So what he would end up doing, like when he did a shrug, he would put 800 pounds on, and if it moved 2 millimeters, and you know, all you got to do is his head bobbing. You know, and then he counted that a shrug. His incline dumbbell curls were always my favorite, though, because he would get on a 45 or 30 degree incline and he would grab these 100-pound dumbbells and he would lay back on them. And then it was essentially a front raise where he would slam it back into his front delt. He held it kind of like in a hammer curl position and it would hit his front delt. And then he would let the arms, his elbow, pivot all the way up past his head. And that was to get supposedly the contraction, and then it would just slam back down. So it was like, it wasn't even a bicep curl. You couldn't even really describe it. It was just a weird elbow raise that was just in you know, but you look at his arms, how can you argue with it, you know?
Yeah. I'm looking at some of the videos right now, and he's just incredible physique.
Yeah.
It's really, really amazing. But yeah, everything was just, you know, obviously there's some genetics involved there. And he trained really hard.
That's yeah, he the did. Thing,
you know, effort can make up for lack of form and mind muscle connection, so to speak.
Yeah, so. And he would do strip sets on, you know, every set. He would do forced reps. I mean, if Bertle Fox was doing a forced rep, it was four forced reps. It was just a constant. I mean, like if he failed at six, it was up to you to give him 10. You know, and it was just like that's what he wanted, man. And the funny thing is it was so unique to his style. Because like you watch him do incline dumbbells, one dumbbell came down before the other, and it would hit his shoulder, and then the other one, and he would rock his upper body back and forth on this bench, And mm-hmm. it was just essentially, you know, you just, he was just rolling around on this bench and the dumbbells just happened to go in the air. And that was for his upper pecs.
But they're like 120 pound dumbbells or something. Outrageous. Oh,
yeah. 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 120s, 50s, even sometimes. Yeah. Unreal stuff. And his tricep pushdowns, he would load up as many plates as he could on a tricep pushdown. And then he would grab a thick towel, wrap it around his neck, and he would, because the cord would cut his neck open. And he would let the cord run across like his right side of his neck, and he would lean all the way over, put his hands almost touching, his elbows would be flared, and he turned it into a really weird decline press. And he would get so heavy sometimes that he would have his workout partner like put his arms, like his hands on his traps, and like hang from Bertel so that Bertel didn't go up in the air from the push. And somehow nothing ever tore.
Yeah. Amazing.
But, you know, they said the same thing about Ronnie. You know, Ronnie was invincible. Ronnie was invincible. And look at all the problems, you know, Ronnie's having now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still contend in watching Ronnie train, though. I have the sense that he's got a better mind-muscle connection, so to speak, than people people attribute to him. He just seemed like he was moving the weight with some momentum. But, you know, I'm going to get into some of the geeky stuff, but you're stronger on an eccentric than a concentric. And he was basically able to find that sort of power groove, Dante calls it, Dante Trudell, where you're giving yourself just enough oomph on the concentric to match your strength during that part of the range of motion. And then you were lowering it with control in the muscle you're trying to train and the eccentric. But the whole movement itself, you know, wasn't strict and robotic. But the human strength curve is not a straight line. Independent of velocity and shortening or lengthening of contraction. So it actually makes sense that you would have sort of what looks like more of a ballistic type of repetition if you're matching how human skeletal muscle works, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what running is about. I can get into all that. We've got, you know, all the things, like look at the tendon on your calf. You know, that's basically a spring so that you can take advantage of a stretch shortening cycle that allows us to run, you know? And the most of the things that we do, if you look at guys who work construction, they involve as much muscle as they can, and they involve some, you know, some ballistic movements when they're moving big weights and big loads around. So our bodies are kind of built to do that, and some of it has to do with just the, you know, the way that nature through evolution constructed the human skeletal muscle to function under shortening versus lengthening contractions. So anyway, Bertel, I don't know if Bertel was in tune with that. I doubt he was thinking about that kind of thing.
No, but to Bertel and Branch, I will say this, you know, when people critique him, and, you know, of course, you know, you can critique him all day long for it. I mean, because, you know, I'm one of those guys that if I even do an explosive rep, I got a week's worth of freaking ibuprofen. But, you know, these guys are doing what just feels natural to them. Mm-hmm. And they're just going with it. You know, they go in and they train hard and they train ballistic. And then on the other hand, you've got guys, which, you know, like if you watch Scott train or you watch, like I said, the same way, you know, I train, I always do a very slow negative. I do a very controlled positive. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that I don't want to get hurt. Mm. Now, I do know I feel it more, you know, when I train that way, no doubt about it. But, you know, there's a part of me that would love to grab under, get underneath a weight and just, you know, be able to go explosive and ballistic, but I just can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Not built for it.
Yeah. I think there's a cumulative wear and tear on the connective tissue and all the structures that are involved. It just, you know, it just kind of prohibits that unless you're wanting to tear, but I've had plenty of tears. I've got tears all over the place, actually. Yeah. I'm sure you do too.
Everybody does. I think once you get to a certain, and again, it's a little bit of a wear and tear age factor, but that's why, you know, when you see, you know, guys in their 40s and 50s training, you know, I always try to explain to them, I said, you know, you need to go to all about intensity and using different techniques to get that intensity instead of, you know, trying to do, you know, triples and, you know, sets of five and six. And, you know, I watch these older guys do it. And I'm just thinking, my God, I'm jealous of you, but I can't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can still get away with it now and again, but not every day. Not like, you know, 20 years ago.
No, not even close. I used to watch that old Branch Warren video, And I'd always think the same thing. You know, I'm going to get in there today. I'm going to try that. And I'd do two sets, and I'd be like, okay, I can't fucking brush my teeth the next day because my freaking shoulders hurt so bad. I was like, you know, and finally I got to a point where it's like, it's just not worth even trying. So I'm like, I know I can't do it. So, you know, I just have to do a little slower reps.
Right.
Hey, so you mentioned, I wanted to throw in too, you had mentioned something about a unique protocol that a Russian bodybuilder used.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What was that?
It's actually really not, it's funny. It's not as unique as it is kind of just well thought out over decades, I will say. And I think, Scott, I talked to you one time even about it, but here's what he ended up doing is when I was talking to him, he had kind of done the old Matt Porter experiments where he had, over the years, he would take one compound and run it all by itself. And then see where he could go before it just felt bad, if you know what I mean. It just didn't before the side effects were kind of too much for him.
Was he incrementally increasing the dose until he started?
No, what he would end up doing was he would do like maybe 6 to 8 weeks of just 300 milligrams of compound A, okay. And then he said he would feel good, and then he would come back to that compound, you know, maybe in a few months. And go to 400, and then he would know within about 4 or 5 weeks. You know, he'd the side effects, and you know, he just didn't. He kind of came to a conclusion where, and this is what's odd with him, was he came to the conclusion that he wanted to do, he wanted to have a set number. So, like, in other words, I'll give you kind of an example of what he said. He can't go above 300 milligrams of test without having to run, you know, an anti-estrogen or any of those things. And he says he can't run those because of what they do to his joints. And, you know, that's been discussed for years and years about some people just can't run joints. So he knows he can go to 300 is what he said. So then he knows he always calls it his 5-3s. So he knows he can go to NPP at 300 before he starts to suffer effects. And he kind of figured out what his, you know, favorite compounds were and where he could go with them. And he looks at it, and again, not saying this guy is right or that he has science behind him or anything like that, but what he's saying is, I want to go with the total anabolic ratio, I guess what you want to put it. When you're kind of talking to him, you have to kind of decipher a little bit. But he wants to do compounds like, you know, tests that he doesn't have to get too much worried about estrogen, so he found 300. NPP, he didn't have to worry about, you know, prolactin, whatever it is, and he decided that was where he was going to be at there. And then he knew that with EQ, he'd go to 400 before he started to get anxiety. So he started to feel all these things out, and what he found was I could run each one of these compounds at these low numbers and never had really a problem, you know, per se. You know, I mean, he felt good, you know, running these compounds. So he may run a total of 1,200 or 1,500 milligrams, but each one of the compounds was in lower amounts. He was just running multiple compounds for low amounts. And he runs everything. He even sent me this weird chart that, like, he had done out with every compound he uses and the amount he can do.
Huh.
And, you know, and then he would pick, when he does his cycle, it wouldn't necessarily always be the same cycle, but he would pick at random which ones he could do, and that's how he would, you know, put together his cycle. And this guy is, you know, older, done very well for himself with it, but he said, he goes, he'd been doing it this way for over 20 years. So, you know, I mean, he looks good, he looks healthy, he's big, you know, and, you know, it's one of those weird things. And he even said the same thing about, you know, growth. He said, you know, I have buddies of mine who run 6 and 10 milligrams of growth. He says, I can't do that. He goes, because the fatigue, he said, is just god awful for him. So he said he found out that he can do 4 a farm grade, and that's as far as he can go. And so he, you know, he doesn't try to, you know, incrementally increase it. He just sticks to that amount, and he cuts all cycles off at 12 weeks. And then at the end of the 12 weeks, he runs a just low test. He runs test at all year round at 300 milligrams.
The cycles, are they singular compounds, or is he stacking?
He's stacking now.
How many of those would he stack, 2 or 3? Or
Oh no, he would get his total milligrams up to about four, or he'd get up to about 1,200 milligrams. So to give you an example, if I'm looking at, like, let me pull this. I got a sheet here. He had on one of his, and again, he has everything is randomly. I mean, like Winstrol, he knows he can do 30 milligrams a day without his joints hurting. So mm-hmm. he figures all this out, and then he randomly just puts together a cycle. But like I said, one of his cycles he had listed here was 300 a test sip, 300 NPP, 400 EQ, and then he ran oral turinabol at 35 milligrams a day throughout the week. And then his HGH was at 4 IUs. But so, then, go ahead.
Well, see, so, I mean, the reason why I'm asking is that it's very systematic to look at each of them and basically, you know, incrementally increase the dose in a way till he figures out when he sort of butts up against mm-hmm. his threshold for, or maybe you could call it his tolerance for, which not really his tolerance, but the amount of side effects he's willing to tolerate.
Right.
But then you've got the possibility that there's going to be synergistic or compounding effects of adding two things together. So, yeah. If he pulls from the random hat and he gets NPP and trenbolone,
right.
Did he find those don't double up on him in a way?
So no. And what he does now, I will say this: if you look at the chart he has, everything uh-huh. is listed by DHT or
categories.
Well, this is like Bill Roberts deal. Yes,
like class one. Yeah.
So he picks one out of each category. Now he does know. He says this, and this is what I thought was funny. His favorite thing is to run, of course, he runs tests, 300 milligrams, NPP, 300 milligrams. And he kind of jokingly told me, he goes, I always like to run mast. He goes, even in low amounts, which he runs 100 milligrams of mast, because he says anything that Deca can give me as far in regards to, or Nandrolone can give me as far as Decadec or any of these other things can be offset by the Masteron.
Mm.
So he does have like certain ones. Like if you look at the sheet here, like it'll have NPP, and then it always has just off to the side, 100 milligrams Masteron. So anytime he runs a Nandrolone, he's running a Masteron. Hmm. So that's how he kind of offsets any kind of side effect if he, you know, to do with that. Even though he says at 300 milligrams he doesn't have an effect, he's still uh-huh. running every time he runs a Nandrolone. He runs a DHT.
How many categories does he have, or what are
he
what
has
are the
on here? He has testosterones okay. listed. He's got nandrolones listed, DHTs listed, and then he has what he considers pathways. Now, I've never been able to get this out of him because I haven't been able to talk to him much. But he has a pathway category.
So there are 19 NORs and 5 alpha reduced, essentially.
Yes.
Is what I mean? Okay. Yeah. He calls them DHT. That's not really.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, but I got it. Okay, this is cool. Yeah.
He lists them as DHTs. And uh-huh. then you look at the other side, he has what he calls pathways, which he claims give him growth in a different way than what other compounds do.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, so he runs like on an oral, okay, he'll run like he lists those also. There's in the one DHT category, he has quote unquote Winnie in there, but in his other pathways, he also has Winnie. So he kind of some of these are repetitive, you know, when you look at the sheet here.
They're in multiple categories.
Right.
Yeah.
So he'll pick three or four, and he just keeps rotating. Hmm. You know, he does love, and I will say this, he did list it down below here. He loves primobolan. But primobolan he found he has at least run 600 milligrams to get an effect. And that's even with other compounds, you know, where he's, you know, you like you're talking about getting a synergistic effect, you know, he's actually when he runs primobolan, it's always 600 milligrams because he says he doesn't feel anything unless he does. Hmm. So again, it's kind of odd, and you're kind of going by a language barrier on when I'm looking at some of this stuff. But yeah, I mean, he has something that he feels is kind of thought out in more, you know, quote unquote science based.
Yeah, no, that's just that's experiential learning, which is the same process really that scientists do. I mean, you perform a lab experiment, you learn something, and then you take those findings and you move forward to conduct the next experiment. Would he not put like Primo and Winnie together if they both DHTs, or would he like let's say he's got two DHTs, let's say it's those two, and the limits are 630 per day on 600. So would he then say, well, I'm going to use two of them, so I got a half the dose of each of these, or maybe some other rule of thumb?
No, what he does is when you look at like he lists his Prima Bolin in a whole separate category.
Oh,
he lists it. Yeah, he lists it under like he you know without that pathway category. He lists it under a DHB because he does
DHB.
Yeah, he said it's not a DHT; it's a DHB, just like EQ.
Okay.
So yeah, so he said it's a Boldenon. So he said that's he goes that's he goes down there, and so he doesn't consider it a DH. He doesn't consider Prima Bolin a DHT. But you are correct; he will not put generally two of them. But the only thing he gets odd about is Masteron is always included with Anandrolone. Not necessarily with Trend, but with his NPP and with his Deca. Now, the weird thing is he doesn't consider that even a DHT because he will run Winnie with it also. But he just says he has to, if he wants to function with these compounds, he's got to run at least 100 milligrams of Masteron.
How many years of experience did it take him to drive this?
But it took him 20 years.
Wow.
And what he would do is he always ran tests year-round. He ran 300 milligrams of test year-round, which he found out he could do. But he ran 300 milligrams of test year-round, and then he would add these compounds in to see how they made him feel. You know, he'd
like every 3 months, he'd 3 months off, 3 months on. So like two. So this is like 40 experiments, roughly. Two experiments a year for a couple decades.
Yeah, the only time he would come off the experiment was when he was getting, he would give you a show a year, and then, of course, he would do a 12-week cycle. And sometimes he would skip and sometimes he would skip 2 years between shows, so he had a lot of time to, you know, play with a lot of these compounds. And he's kind of one of these guys, when you talk to him, he's very into the, how you want to put it, he's completely enthralled with all of this. He wants to, I mean, his whole life existence, I mean, he's a trainer. He wants to, you know, figure all this out. And he actually, you know, I mean, or as odd as it sounded when I was talking with him, it's you know, I mean, it kind of in a weird, funky way. You're like, I can see where he's coming from. Yeah.
You know, totally makes sense to me because, I mean, just look at how many people give you different personal experiences. And, of course, some of this is confounded by whether or not they got real or fake stuff that they're basing this judgment on. But like, you know, Trenbolone, it makes me horny as hell. I'm a stallion. Trenbolone, it totally shuts me down. Mm-hmm. So like, that's like one of the most extreme examples where you get ranges from like, this is the, you know, the best aphrodisiac that there is to this is just, you know, makes me a eunuch.
Yeah.
So
go ahead.
I was just saying what really, really matters in the long run, I'm presuming that he didn't have problems finding things that, that were legit, you know, that were actually what he thought they were. What really makes a difference is what works for you. You know, and this is why it's just kind of a side topic, but some people will talk about bro science and someone might say, this is bro science. And I wouldn't consider this what you've explained that this guy's doing is bro science. I think of bro science when someone like makes up a scientific explanation that there really is no science to substantiate. They're just like coming up with bullshit. Either they've completely fabricated it or they've just passed it along and there's really no scientific Western published scientific evidence to substantiate it. But this is, he took empirical science approach to determining these things, which makes good sense.
Go ahead.
What did he, I got so many questions about, did he, so this was, you know, I understand that. So he figured out sort of what the categories were and the ways in which he could combine them. And you know, the rule of adding Masteron with Dandrolones and those sorts of things. Then did he, so that's kind of like he created like an algorithm for steroid combinations, but did he have different goals? Like there's an off season algorithm where, you know, you wouldn't use DHTs necessarily. You go with something would be more anabolic per se.
No.
Or it was all just designed for like pre-contest, getting ready to go on stage.
He would run, and here's what's odd about his, and not odd, but this is what he likes to do. He trains in cycles. Like he
periodization.
Yeah, well, he trains and does his cycles like he's always prepping for a show. He said I don't do any compound before a show because he's always lean that I wouldn't do in the off season. So
gotcha.
Everything he does, like you said, I even asked him. I said, in off season, do you run deck over NPP? Or he says no. Everything I do, he says, I'm always training. My training style in his compound usage is always the same. The only thing that might change before a show is the addition of more compounds.
So he might just up the dose and reduce the caloric intake. Add, instead of three,
instead of four compounds, he may do five. He changes it in that regard. But the funny thing is, one thing he did tell me, which I thought was actually kind of cool, but he said, we were talking about Masteron, he was bringing that up. And I said, well, I can't take that stuff. I said, man, it swells up my prostate. And you start to shed hair, whatever it was. And he goes, oh, that's a myth. And I said, well, it can't be a myth if I'm experiencing it. He goes, no, it's not the myth. He goes, well, it's not the Masteron causing it. And I said, so how do you figure? He goes, Masteron frees up more test. He goes, the addition of more test into your bloodstream is what causes your hair to fall out based on the conversion in the hair, the scalp, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't believe that Masteron or DHT causes these issues per se. He believes that the freeing up of more test is what causes the issues in the scalp and the prostate.
So I presume he probably based that on an experiment where he maybe elicited the side effects with a given dose of Masteron and then was able to reduce this testosterone and stop those side effects.
And what he ended up, even on the compounds you see here, he will sometimes, even though he loves 300 milligrams, if he runs a DHT, he will reduce his test so that he doesn't have, quote unquote, the side effects that people blame on Masteron or on Winnie or any of these other things.
Right. So for him, like all of the cycles basically would be the same. There was a difference in terms of, like, for instance, he wasn't thinking about outcome measures being muscle mass.
No.
Or versus fat loss. Like,
no,
a lot of people they shift to things because they want to lose more fat, and gear can help with that. But he was never doing it with that intention in mind. That wasn't like part of his formula. Okay.
No, he tries to stay lean. He said, I want to be always within striking distance of a show. He said, so I just run the compounds I normally always run. He said, the only difference would be, my food intake is a little bit different, and so was the compounds, 12 weeks before. But he said, he goes, there's no need to eliminate certain compounds if they work for you. He goes, I want to carry a certain look, year round. And he doesn't switch. I mean, when you look at the off season or compared to when he's for contests, the only thing that you can see on this chart is the addition of additional compounds and his food intake drops a little.
And what's interesting there, I remember from some of your other, stepping back now to some of your other story time with Lats, is that you would talk to like some of the guys from the Middle East.
Yeah.
And the general pattern there, and other guys sort of corroborated this, is that they'll be like completely off and clean part of the year, and then they just go friggin' hog wild.
Yeah,
they will use like no testosterone and the most androgenic stuff they can, with the intention that that's going to help with fat loss. Am I just generalizing it fairly accurately?
No, you're right. In what I have seen in the last probably year is you're seeing now. Years ago, when that whole infatuation of what the Middle East guys were doing, came about. There was a lot of low test and really high, anabolics and low test. Everything else was, extremely high, but the test was, was low. Well, now you're starting to see a little bit of a westernized shift.
Right.
Yeah, where you're starting to see a lot of these guys are now utilizing, because you've had more and more Americans going over there. When you have guys that are going over to Oxygen Gym, like, Brandon Carey and Curry and a couple of the others, that influence, I'm not saying I'm blaming it on them, but they're getting more and more, from what the guys are telling me, they're getting more and more, quote unquote, westernized in their cycles now. They're starting to use more tests, and doing things along what we normally would see on, message boards or what have you. But But you know, back in when you know the big thing was the IFBB World Championships, you know, those weigh-in photos that everybody got so infatuated with all the time.
Yeah,
they you know, those guys were, you know, a lot of them were just low test and just high androgen, and just got a certain look to them that everybody was kind of like, you know, Jesus, you know, how are they getting this look? But you know, and again, you kind of look at those photos and you think, yeah, those guys look awesome. But again, it's perspective. Who are they standing next to? You know, size wise or, you know, whatever. I think, you know, sometimes, you know, that gets a little bit lost, but those guys were at one time, like I said, doing low test and, you know, but you know, here's the funny thing. I'll tell you, I can't tell you who told me the story, unfortunately, because he might be listening, but one of the guys made a funny deal, and this guy was involved in Gold's Gym for long periods of time, back in the 80s and 90s. And he said the funny shift was, everybody considered test to be a dirty drug. You know, guys got gyno from a water bloat, estrogen related problems, you know, that type of thing. So nobody really liked test. And he said there was a bodybuilder who had won the team universe, or had won the universe, they called it back then. And this guy was, you know, fairly well known in bodybuilding circles, but he had moved himself out to Santa Monica. And he said, I can recall one time everybody looked at him and he had come in. He was a small guy, you know, short, but he had gained considerable amount of mass in a fairly short time. So, and, you know, now that he was a pro, you know, he wasn't held back by a certain, you know, division or a certain weight class. So he was gaining quite a bit of size. So a lot of the guys were gathered around him talking to him. And this guy had made mention that he had upped his test to 800 milligrams a week. And he said that caused such an uproar that people thought he was just suicidal at 800 milligrams a week, that they couldn't believe he would use that much. And, you know, he was trying to explain to them that, you know, what he was trying to do. But he said, you'd be surprised the number of pros back then. And of course we're talking, you know, late 80s, were just baffled that you would go to 800 milligrams of test, you know? So that's what kind of, you know, I always look back on. Now we see guys doing 1,500 milligrams, 2 grams test, and they're taking all this shit to counteract the, you know, some of the sides. And again, I don't judge anybody on what they use. Use what you want to get the effect you're after, as long as you're being, you know, trying to be fairly smart. But these guys were just baffled by completely asked by 800 milligrams. They couldn't believe it.
That was, yeah, just so outside of the norm at that time.
Yeah, he said, because
it was mind-boggling.
Yeah, he said, if you went up to 4 or 5, everybody was kind of like, and he goes, don't get me wrong, you heard of people doing it, but nobody would ever just come out and admit it, you know, that they were doing it. This guy was like, I'm using 800 milligrams of test. He goes, everybody was just floored. They couldn't believe he did that. But he said, the funny thing is, because obviously it worked because he was much, much bigger, you know, so he's like, so he goes, then people kind of got that in their head. Well, maybe I should try this, you know, and maybe, you know. And he said, he goes, I'm not saying that's where it started. He goes, but he goes, it was just baffling to see all these pros and these well-known guys, you know, at Gold's Gym were just flabbergasted by 800 milligrams. Now it's nothing, you know.
Right. And of course, I'm sure many people listening to this are thinking, you know, like, so where on average have these doses translated to in terms of what we see in, at least at the top of the, even from the top to the bottom, like, how come we just don't see more and more gigantic monsters?
Well, you know, and this is why I always bring up with these guys on the board. You know, if you're posting your cycle, and I'm not degrading any of the guys on the board, but I see these guys posting grams. And you know what I mean?
Right.
And just, yeah, and they don't look like they're on grams. Hmm. So, yeah. and this is what I've always said is, okay, guys, I'm not telling you to stop the game. I'm not telling you that. I'm just saying that where do you go from here? You know, if you're on 2 grams and you look like the way you do, where do you go?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, do you go to 3 now, you know, and how much is that going to get you? Or have you hit your genetic, you know, limit? And what's funny is like, and I'm not degrading any of these divisions, but we have a lot of guys who are in classic. And what they do is they tell us that they are in classic because it's healthier. And that's the one thing, at least thing I want to hear, is because some of these classic guys are posting their cycles and it's no different than the open guys.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, but your genetics just aren't allowing you to get big. if you know what I mean. So it's kind of, you know, you're small because you're small. You know, it's just, I just don't know where you're going to keep going, you know, from there. But again, you just, you know, it's not my life for them, you know, and I hey, anybody that gets on stage, I'm all for, to be honest with you. I just, you know what I mean? It's not an easy process, but you just kind of look at it and you go, well, God, guys, if you're doing 2,500 milligrams, you know, where does it stop? You know, I mean, how much more are you going to gain if you had 500 more?
You know, the interesting thing there is, you know, I really do think there was an honest to goodness, you know, good intention to try to, you know, create the other divisions such that there you could have people competing without relying on so much stuff.
Right.
But what ends up happening is now you make sort of being more competitive on top of the your division, so to speak, weight wise, more possible. And if you have someone, let's say 15 years ago, who said, I'm going to be a bodybuilder, and they tried and they tried and they tried and they got to, you know, doing everything they could, and they got to 2 grams a week, and it wasn't working. Then they might say, you know what? I'm never going to be a pro. I'm not going to be the next coming of Lee Haney or what have you. So I'm just going to, like, you know, enjoy this and just be a kind of a recreational bodybuilder. But nowadays, and sometimes you obviously can make money. Again, I'm not trying to disparage anyone, but I think there probably are a number of people who do find that those 2 grams will get them to whatever, 185 pounds on stage at 5'8 or 5'9, which puts them at the top of the classic physique division. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
No.
But then they're battling, you know, because they're at the top of the division and they could continue. And for some people, then they get to do exactly what they love, and that's badass. That's phenomenal. But right. For other people, it creates this environment where they are in this situation. And Lord knows bodybuilders have psychological issues, and I'm not excluding myself from that. But now you've got a situation where someone we've created an environment where they can be using high levels of drugs for prolonged periods of time and doing themselves physical harm.
Right.
Because we've made the divisions accessible in that way. And I was kind of roundabout in my explanation of what I'm getting at there, but I think the bottom line is that it would be ideally you'd have the division such that guys could use less to be competitive. And now I think we may have a situation for some people where you're making a division where it sort of gives them a reason to continue to use really, really high doses if they're not a good responder.
And this that's what I've always said about that division. And again, I don't disparage the division. What upsets me about it is that, you know, number one, I'm always been a bodybuilding purist. I look at the open and I just pay attention to the open. I really don't pay attention to the other divisions. It's not because it's what you like, and I just don't watch the other divisions.
Sure.
But the problem I have always had was that this was supposedly created because people didn't want to take as much shit. That was one of the gist of it. We don't see that, though, because what you're seeing is people who just maybe don't have, you know, great genetics or a poor responder, but they're taking a ton of shit to get into a division that's considered, you know, classic, that isn't big. I mean, they're not big, but they're just to get into that division, they're taking a ton of shit.
Yeah.
So it, to me, it was always one of these deals where I hear these people go, well, you know, they'll post a picture. Should I go to open or should I go to classic? Which I hate those deals, by the way. And just, my God, choose one. Stop asking freaking armchair warriors where you should go. But you see it on Facebook all the time, or Instagram.
Oh, yeah. Classic, question mark, or open, and they just show up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of those.
Yeah, it's awful. But the thing I always tell them is, well, what are you gaining from it? Because if this is because, you know, and you always have somebody say, go to classic, it's healthier. Well, if this guy is within striking distance of classic, you know he's not going to reduce his dosage. He's going to reduce his food intake. I mean, he's going to do something to make that. So essentially, he's done nothing to make himself healthier. He's still taking the same shit, but his genetics just don't allow him to be competitive in the open. It's just that I just don't like to see guys constantly use that as a tag, that it's healthier, when, you know, none of this is super healthy. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, especially contest. But it just, to me, was always one of these deals where I saw people that when they asked this question, you know, and it used to be, and you remember this, of course, but back in the 80s and 90s, you just brought your best package to the stage and the numbers fell where they fell.
Sure.
And some of these classic guys in the off season, I don't care what they say, they're open bodybuilders. And they're just dieting so far down to make this. Why wouldn't you, you know, but I will say this. I think that, you know, people, I think there's going to be a shift. And the only thing I can say, because I've talked to some people in the judging area, they've even said the same thing. Now the classic is so flooded with people. And it's just, I mean, mathematics just starts to tell you that your chances start to diminish, you know. Sure. Even in the classic, because you've just got so many people, and now you're held down by an arbitrary weight number, and most people are going to want to, you know, who wants to train to maintain, you know, a lot? And some of these guys are now doing that just so they can make this, you know, this number. But once you start seeing that maybe they're not placing as well because of just pure mathematics of the situation, I still think you're going to see a shift of them starting to gravitate towards open bodybuilding.
Yeah. All right. Hey, guys, we had a couple more questions, but due to just some technical issues that we've got going on, we are actually going to have to stop the show, which I think this is the greatest place as any. The only reason I even say that is because, you know, we did put the question thread up and we did have some good questions. I know Casey had a bunch of cool stuff to share, especially on that UGL versus farm grade question. So I think what we'll do is, if we put a pin in this for now, Casey, would you be up for coming back and doing like a round two with us?
Oh, no, no problem. You can anytime, buddy, anytime.
Dude, that'd be awesome, man. We had somebody say that we needed a regular segment of Storytime with Lats. Anytime you want to come out and tell your stories, man, dude, this is, listen, I was just sitting back and like, I got to be a listener. I got to be a fan of podcasts, just sitting here being on the show even, man. That was awesome stuff.
Well, like I said, I've got probably 12 of them sitting around. Not a problem. Like I said, well, if you decide you want to do that, we'll pick one at random. And like I said, there's a lot of detail with them, and hopefully, like I said, you know, you guys can utilize some of it.
Dude. Yeah. If you're up for it, man, let's plan on it. Let's do that. And let's answer the rest of these questions then.
Yeah. Yeah. No problem.
Let's get the Russian scientist on. I'd love to bring him on.
Exactly.
That would be really cool. Right.
I tell you what, and like I said, I can contact him and just see, you know, and the whole thing that's neat about this, you know, we can contact him, see if he's doing anything different now, because this was probably, 8 months ago at least. So like I said, you know it's kind of, sometimes he switches things up. He has kind of a funky training style. And so, I mean, there's a lot of things you can kind of delve in with him.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that would be very cool. I mean, I'm sure the three of us could just spend like 3 hours just delving in, because he's the guy who's spent 20 years, you know, doing experiments in that sort of a systematic fashion is going to have some very, very cool things to tell us about. So very good. Yeah. Let's definitely take this up on another podcast soon.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we are going to get out of here for another episode of Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson. I'm Scott McNally with extra special guest Casey Reed. We will see you soon, guys. If you've enjoyed Scott Stevenson's contribution to Muscle Minds, you can learn more about him, his products, and his services at fortitudetraining.net. And if you order any of his products or services, you get a free subscription to his message board where he answers questions daily. Go to fortitudetraining.net to learn more about all these products, services, and events offered by Scott Stevenson. Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy. Not being scared if you never please me.
Voices Radio.